Better here. And that's running. Okay, thanks. Welcome to TechEd. Thanks for being here. It's the last session of the day. And I hope you're comfortable, because what I typically do is I wouldn't mind taking a little nap right before the session, coming early. Actually saw some of you doing that, so that's fine. My name is Dandy. I'm a technical product manager at Microsoft, focusing a lot on SQL Server. And I'm actually very excited to talk to you about what we're going to talk about is Windows Azure, SQL Database, SQL Server in a virtual machine, and how things are changing. This is a small group. I encourage you to ask questions during the session. If the question is not at the right time, or we're going to cover it later, I will just tell you. But any question you have should be answered. Okay, that's my goal for today. After this, I'm going to invite you to drinks at the welcome reception as well. So, hey, this is going to be a good session, right? Okay. So how many of you are database administrators, if I may ask? Okay, that's quite the majority. Do we have database developers, system architects? Okay, perfect. Okay. So I have my contact information up there. I think if later on you download the session, you have any follow-up questions, feel free to send me a note on that one. Okay. Any of you have been to the pre-con earlier on Cloud DBA? Were you in that pre-con where I did the presentation at first? Because if you were, this session will not be a good use of your time. I want to be very honest to you about that. So the majority of what you did in the pre-con is going to be a repeat in this session. It's just more consolidated. Okay. You're more than welcome to stay, though. The world is changing, and if you look at this, the world is changing. This is farming in what, the 1960s? Okay. And when I talk to the SharePoint guys, they like to talk about farming on how many SharePoint farms they run and manage. Okay, same thing as DBAs, right? We manage a farm and a pool of servers. But that farming over the years has changed into more advanced technologies. And if you look at farming nowadays, you see there's a major change in farming, right? Because the farmers that are out there adopting new technologies, they're no longer just growing the same products to feed cattle or to feed us, basically. But they're looking into opportunities where they can maximize and optimize new opportunities that will make them more money, and leveraging technologies where they really need to optimize to take advantage of those technologies. And so what we have as DBA system architecture is actually fairly similar to an evolution that we see going across in the industry. Okay? This is how I like to do my job. Make sure everything just run automated and optimized. And it's really all about efficiency, optimization, technologies, and new scenarios. And it's with those couple of slides and pictures that I showed you, that I really want to open your mind on how to think differently when you walk out of this session, where you can start leveraging cloud opportunities. Because how many of you are currently running and using Windows Azure? Can I see some hands there? Okay. That's more than I expected. So that's pretty good, actually. Okay. So I want to open that up and have you look at those opportunities. So what is Windows Azure? We see a lot of things on Windows Azure, and we talk about cloud all the time. If we really look at it, this is what makes Windows Azure. You have a global physical infrastructure of servers and networks that are built out in Microsoft data centers. We have managed resources that you can get access to, which is all usage-based, and we have that in multiple regions, together with 24 edge locations that give you high-speed connectivity to each of those regions. Now, if we then look up and we look at that compute, data services, and networks, those are the key components that we need to have in order to drive application services and drive application layers. So when we talk about media integration, we talk about analytics, high-performance computing, and so on top of Azure, we need to have compute power, we likely need to have data services power, and we likely need to have networking. Looking at the compute, that will go into, I can run virtual machines or any other cloud services. like, for example, SQL Server reporting services could run perfectly on Windows Azure. I could run some of the mobile services, or I could easily spin up a website and then build that in. Now, we're not going to focus on that too much, because what we really care about here is what we have into those data services, and also how we're going to be using SQL Server running in a virtual machine on Windows Azure, and how I can make that part of my network as well. Okay? And of course, we're going to need to have virtual networking that comes with that. Now, if you look at that from a data management perspective, there's two options to this. You have this non-relational component that everyone is talking about, and that goes into the big data and the Hadoop distributions, where many vendors have actually many flavors of Hadoop integration. It also goes into capabilities that we have to store data in a non-relational fashion, which could be a pure blob store, or it could be a table storage. Now, the table storage on the non-relational engine in Windows Azure is probably that something as DBAs we won't really care about, but as database developers or application developers, you might want to look into that to see, why would I need to use a database if I could quickly store some tables and use those tables within my applications? The core focus of this session is going to focus on the relational part, because we're going to have pretty much some good coverage on sessions throughout the rest of the week that's going to talk about that non-relational aspect of it. Okay? So on the relational part, we have SQL Server that could run in a virtual machine. And how many of you run SQL Server virtualized already, whether that's in the cloud or it's in your own data centers? Whether that's on Hyper-V or any other virtualization technology, to be honest, right? So then the other component we're going to look at is SQL Database, which is a pure database offering. And I'm going to show you the capabilities, the restrictions, the enrichments, and the opportunities that you have with there. If I have to build an application that needs to have database structures with tables and store procedures that I could query and store procedures I can run, I might not need to go to a fully virtualized full SQL Server running into a virtual machine. I might as well just go to the data services, which is a SQL database, and start using that one, with scale-out opportunities as well and scale-out capabilities. Okay, so two options. One of them, the virtual machine, is what we call infrastructure as a service. The other one is what we call platform as a service, which is the Windows Azure SQL Database offering. Now, it really depends on how much control you want or how much control you need. If you want to have full control and flexibility, and that really goes into patching the operating system, applying service updates to SQL Server, making modifications to really manage a typical virtualized server environment, you're going to have to go for SQL Server in a Windows Azure virtual machine. If you don't care about that and you want to take away a lot of the administrative tasks and administrative overload that you have, you could go for the simplified administration with SQL Database, build your modern apps on top of that, and still have flexibility, eliminate hardware cost at a much lower price than you would typically just virtualize SQL Server. Okay? What if you want to build out a network and I want to combine multiple virtual machines together? That's all perfectly possible, and we're going to look into some of those components and scenarios. So scenario could be, and I think that was pretty clear when Mark Rusinovich talked this morning about the offering that we have with Windows Azure, especially if you're a Microsoft partner or your customer that has an MSDN subscription, to spin up a test and dev environment. If I need to spin up a test and dev environment, I could just spin everything up into a Windows Azure virtual machine. So my wife works in real estate, and a while ago, one of my friends says, you know what, I'm going to start my own business, software development, but I need an office. I said, oh, talk to my wife, right? That's how real estate agents work. So she walks around Seattle, goes visit different office buildings, and one of the buildings they get to, they say, oh, you're going to run something in the IT industry, no problem. We have this nice building and it has a server room, and a server room is fully wired, fully cabled, everything. Okay? There's a premium to it. You're going to have to pay extra for the server room, but we can make this work. He responded, I don't need a server room because we're going to run everything in the cloud. Okay? Perfectly possible. You can do that. You can run your entire business in the cloud just using Windows Azure Virtual Machine, look at the cloud backup capabilities, or leverage SQL database. Can we implement cloud high availability? Absolutely yes. And not only, you can do that now. If you have SQL Server 2012 or 2008 and you use database mirroring, you can actually put a mirror in the cloud on a Windows Azure Virtual Machine. One of the other things you can do as well is, we're going to make it easier, of course. So this morning we announced the download availability of SQL 2014 CTP bits. I actually have those installed. We're going to make that easier for you to transition and decide what you want to put up in the cloud as well. So you have some additional capabilities there. But I can easily build up an environment where I have always-on availability groups and take one of those always-on availability groups in SQL 2014 and make that available as a cloud-based solution. So you can have synchronous additional replicas that run in the cloud. That might be a scenario that a lot of companies could look into, because now they have a disaster recovery that is not only highly available because of the way we build out our data centers, but also that could be something that could be geo-distributed based on the architecture. So the United States is, if you were following that, has been hit by a lot of bad weather over the past couple of months and even over the past years, actually. We had a customer that was running a data center right in the heart of the city of New York. And then the city of New York, you have the water, which is the Hudson River. Right across the Hudson River is New Jersey, and they had a data center there as well. Bad weather came in. They had a storm called Sandy. That happens to be the name of my sister, so Sandy is trouble, right? And what happens is it knocks out power in the city, and it knocks out power in New Jersey. No problem, we have a backup generator and it's gonna run for 24 hours. Unfortunately, power was out for more than 24 hours. Well, no problem, we can get gas at the gas station, right? Yes, if you go stand in line for 36 hours, you were able to get gas at the gas station, so there was no way you can get fuel. So what we did with that customer is we said, hey, hold on, what we can do for you is your existing system that is currently up and running, and you have that on the backup generator, we can take a replica of it, move that over to the cloud, and have your business continuity running at a totally different region, totally different area, and you could just continue to run business as usual. Okay? Think about those scenarios and those capabilities that you have there. Okay? Now, if you look on the key scenarios, what I can do with a virtual machine, I can move existing applications, move them easily over, build up a test and dev, implement high availability disaster recovery, or extend on-premises applications to a Windows Azure virtual machine. So what I can do is I can actually combine them, because it is SQL Server running in a Windows virtual environment, right? So I still have the concepts of being able to use things like linked server definitions and so on, and I can actually make those part of my domain. You can make that virtual machine part of your existing domain like it would be just sitting within your own data center. Okay? The Windows Azure SQL database, primarily focusing on extending on-premises applications to Windows Azure SQL Database, because I have functionality that actually allows me to take data that sits within my data center and move that over to SQL Database and keep that in sync as well. Okay? So you have full synchronization capabilities there as well. So we're going to drill down a little bit into SQL Server and Windows Azure Virtual Machine, how we configure that, how we spin it up, and how do we manage it. If you look at the Windows Azure Virtual Machine details, I did put this slide in because this is outlining the capabilities and the definition that you could have on each of those virtual machines. Now, what's really nice about this, I can define a virtual machine, assign a certain amount of CPU cores it, and then later on, when I get more business, and typically if we think about retail scenarios, for example, they get more business around the holidays and they get more business when they do sales, they can assign more resources to that virtual machine and scale it down afterwards. Okay, so you can easily address peak times by just doing that. Different options. I always compare it to one of my favorite car brands. You're going to pay more for the highest option, right? So that's why I started like somewhere in the middle, and I hope that one day that I might be able to have the resources to even run more optimized or whatsoever. Now, if you look at the memory, you can really define memory onto each of those, and then you can attach storage to it. And that is not clear to a lot of people when they spin up a virtual machine. We actually can assign multiple storages and attach it to it. Okay? And so in the majority of the configurations, you could start with one storage and then scale that out all the way to 16. Now the storage capacity is 16 storage devices of 1 terabyte each. 16 terabytes. That's a pretty decent size for the majority of the databases that I think each and every one of you is working with for a cloud offering. Am I right on that? Okay, I see some heads going yes. Okay. Now, the great thing about this is that this storage, we're talking about actual storage, and I can really still separate my data files and log files if I want to. So you can really leverage that all together. Key benefit, low total cost of ownership, as we call it. No changes to the application because the application will just connect to any other database connection string that you would typically specify. And I have a library of virtual machine templates that I can start from to really spin up my own Windows Azure virtual machine. Full SQL Server capability, which means I can use the advanced security features that I'm used to within SQL Server already. So if I want to use transparent data encryption, or I want to enable auditing, or I want to enable replication, or use some of the BI components, run SSIS inside a virtual machine, I can totally do that. And I purposely mentioned SSIS there because that might be a virtual machine that you could consider to then populate any of your SQL databases that you have. Okay? Full flexibility and control. You can have full Active Directory integration by joining that to the domain as well. Okay? What are we doing from a management capability? We actually provide you with a service level agreement on that. And you could just manage that all using System Center 2012. How do we spin that up? Well, let's have a look at that. Is there actually someone in the room? I would assume yes. That have never seen the Azure portal? Okay, some hands go up, so I guess some of you have seen it. So what I have here is the Windows Azure portal that I used on my own account. I can see my subscriptions, and I'm actually showing you all items here. Okay, there's quite a few. I have websites, I have storage accounts. I'm also using what we call an HD Insight Cluster, which is the Microsoft Hadoop distribution running on Windows Azure. And actually, that's the one I used during the keynote when I pulled in those Twitter feeds earlier this morning. I have cloud services, I have storage accounts, virtual networks, but I also have reporting services and SQL database. Now, the sweet thing is, if I want to create a virtual machine, what I can do is I can actually click new. I have a quick create virtual machine option, or I have the option to pick one from gallery. Okay? It does not have to be SQL Server. If I go to that gallery, I could basically pick any virtual machine, okay? Now, use common sense when you pick one of those, because what I see here is the SharePoint Server 2013 trial. And actually, one of my BI friends was trying this out, and she wrote a blog about it and then said something on Facebook that she didn't know how to configure this. What do you need if you run SharePoint 2013? You need a domain controller that needs to be Active Directory integrated, so you would first have to set up your domain controller before you start installing and pick that SharePoint 2013 image, right? So you look that I have some options here. I have SQL Server 2012 on Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1. I've got Server 2012. I go down in these images. I got things like BizTalk and so on. Okay, so I can see a full set of virtual machines that will be right there. And as we announced availability of SQL Server 2014 bits this morning, what you can actually do is you could pick SQL Server 2014 CTP1 evaluation on Windows Server 2012. Okay, if I want to play around with SQL 14, that's easy. I just hit next here. So we'll take this one. It's going to ask me for my virtual machine name. I'm going to call that I like SQL 14. So it's easy for me to remember because it's on the back of my shirt. And I'm going to specify the size. So I'm going to go for medium to core, specify the username. Now, when you do this, there's some automatic validation. If I do smart things like I'm going to use the username admin, it's going to tell me this username is not allowed. Okay, so I'm going to do something like cloud admin. And I hope I don't forget my password. Okay, I hit next. And it's going to ask me then the next step is, is this a standalone virtual machine, or do you want to connect that to an existing one and internetwork this? So it is a standard one. So I'm going to do this. Now, when we talk about storage here, what you can do is you have two options. You could first define storage and then add it. Or you could say, no, I want to automatically generate my own storage account. The key difference here is if you use automatically generate, you're going to get a rather funky name. It's going to start with portal VHD. Otherwise, you have control on how you want to name that storage account. Okay? The way it works, you create a blob storage, and on that blob storage, the VHD file, which is very similar to Hyper-V, right, will be created and will be stored on that storage. I can define whether I want that to be part of a virtual network, or I can define which region I want this to be. I'm going to take North Europe, and I could specify who's going to pay for this. Okay. I can say this is a test in dev. I have my Windows Azure MSDN subscription. Thank you, Microsoft. So I can take advantage of that benefit and use that MSDN benefit, okay? And I did choose one that qualifies for the offer. I can actually look into pricing and details if I would go over the free offer that I would get with this, okay? What else I can do is I could specify that I want to create an availability set. What basically happens with the availability set is we're gonna write multiple copies of that VHD within an availability set, which means if we have something going wrong on one of our disks in our data centers, automatically you have failover that will happen basically seamlessly. So I can have that availability set going, or I can just say no. What else I can do is I can enable Windows PowerShell remoting, which I encourage you to enable, because at that point you could basically manage that entire server, control that using PowerShell as well. This is going to start and provision. Okay, now the question I would have on this, how long does it take you to spin up a server and install SQL Server and run it? Well, first of all, you're going to have to look for the hardware, right? Where do I find a machine that has the amount of cores, that has the disk space, and so on? Likely, you're going to have to install the operating system, and then you could start provisioning and install, correct? Now, I'm not going to wait for this to finish, because this is going to take something like close to 10 minutes, which I think is incredibly fast. What I want to talk to you about is what happens behind the scenes. So we use a provisioned image that literally has Windows Server 2012, in this case, sysprepped, and that also has SQL Server 2014, in this case, sysprepped. Now, what we did with our Windows Azure images, as we have them sitting in the gallery, if you install SQL Server, anyone ever installed SQL Server using sysprep? Okay, you're excluded of answering the question. But what happened is, you had to go through a two-step if you were running that on Windows Server. You first had to start the installation, not complete it because you're running a sysprep, but then when you image that machine out, you would then still need to have access to the SQL Server bits and grab those bits and finalize the installation as part of the sysprep process. What we actually did, and we did that cloud first, is we optimized that option that it runs faster. So we have an unattended sysprep-based installation that actually sits inside that image that's going to speed up and finalize that installation right there for you. Okay? Now, what else you can do is, I can just say, hey, you know what? Thanks for that free image, Microsoft, that you provide me with. What I really want to do is, rather than creating an image from the gallery, I want to create my own or upload my own image. Okay? And that is perfectly possible. You can create your own image and then use one of the Windows Azure tools to just take that image from what you have running on your machine and bring that over to directly to your Windows Azure storage account. Okay? Any questions on that? We're all fine? Go ahead. Great question. What about updates? Who's going to take control over that? It is your virtual machine. You take control over your own updates. You take control over your service packs, what you want to do with Windows Update. You have that full flexibility because you run SQL Server in a Windows Azure virtual machine. Well, it depends, right? So typically the upgrade process would be like the way you update any other server. There's no difference. So if you run your, we actually call it Patch Tuesday at Microsoft. If you update the Windows operating system, that's going to go part of your updates. If then an update for SQL is released and you're going to install or take advantage of that update, you're going to have to apply that update. Now, that is a key difference between the infrastructure as a service running into a virtual machine and the database as a service, which is the platform as a service option, because you have no control over that operating system, and you also have no control over the features that we add to Windows Azure SQL Database. Okay, we're going to drill down on that a bit more specifically. Okay, so what I can see now is this virtual machine is up and running. I'm actually going to provision that virtual machine and leave that running for a bit, because what's going to happen afterwards is I can just take that virtual machine, hit connect, okay? It will give me a remote desktop file, RDP file, and as soon as I have that RDP file, I can just remote desktop to it and manage it like I have any other server up and running. Typically, what else you're going to have to do is, once you're done with this, this server is installed, but what you'll have to do is make sure the necessary ports are open on the firewall. So you want to make sure ports are open specifically for SQL, which is typically exactly the same like you would install SQL Server yourself. Now, I mentioned that you can actually create your own virtual machines. So you can actually go to images and say, hey, I want to create my own image, or I want to browse the virtual machine depot, which could be basically look at your gallery, and you could then just take anything that sits into that gallery and get that started. Okay, so there's quite a lot of options on things that you could pick from right there. Okay, so I'm going to switch back to the presentation, and look on what we just talked about. So we looked at the Windows Azure portal. One of the things you'll see at the bottom there is that green bar that's going to provide you status. It actually is going to tell you what are the jobs that I'm currently executing on my Windows Azure portal. In this case, provisioning of a virtual machine. The virtual machine gets up and running. Once it's up and running, my status will be completed. Now, the cool thing about this is not only can I do this through the Windows Azure portal, I can actually do all of that using PowerShell as well. So there's a full PowerShell library available that actually allows you to do that. Okay. Now, when we talk about high availability and disaster recovery, I clicked a little too fast there. I just wanted to show you this diagram. If I look into high availability and disaster recovery running SQL Server on Windows Azure, what I can do is I can enable always-on availability groups in a couple of ways. I can say, you know what? I don't need my own data center anymore. I will run anything and everything on Windows Azure, which means you're going to install SQL Server 2012 on two virtual machines, right? And you need to have a domain controller running in Azure. Okay? Basically, you're saying nothing in my data center, everything in the cloud. Join those machines to the domain, install SQL 2012, enable always-on availability groups on the database that I would like to get it, and you're up and running. Okay? If we talk about a combination, what I can do is I can do an in-house data center when my primary database is sitting where I want it within my own environment, and that my failover capability is sitting in the cloud. Now, one of our program managers that actually works on that features came to Tagit Europe with us, and he has a session that's going to talk specifically about those high availability features later this week. How that works is you basically say, I have a synchronous secondary that runs in Windows Azure Virtual Machine with an on-premise domain controller. Can I have a copy of that domain controller running on Azure? Absolutely yes. Okay, so that could be an option. And what I can do is I could say, between my on-premise, I can have a synchronous secondary on-premises, and I could have one that runs in that Azure data center as part of my availability. How does that work? Well, this morning, Mark was talking about the virtual networking on Windows Azure. And so what you have to do is you can actually build a virtual network by defining a network configuration directly within your Windows Azure virtual machine. Once that you've built that network out, you can then enable how you connect that to your own corporate environment, how you get access to it, and what's going to be the access control list and the firewall configurations you need to bring in place. Okay, but you have that full control. Now, when we talk about guidance, you want to look into capacity planning, right? And you want to look into what are the throughput and the throughput capabilities that I realistically get within that region that I provision that virtual machine. And what's the number of transactions that I can realistically handle? The amount of transactions that you can realistically handle in that virtual machine will depend on where you run your applications. Okay? Database developers, please don't run your applications on the desktop and have a very chatty interaction with a virtual machine that sits in the cloud. You likely also want to take that application and run that in the cloud. Okay. One of my colleagues actually built a really nice application that we call the stock traded application that's available on CodePlex, and that is actually fully provisioned in Windows Azure. You could really play with that if you want to. When it comes to increasing capacity, you could add multiple data drives, so you could do file groups, you could do striping your data, separate your data files from log files like you traditionally would do. There is a difference between choosing SQL Server Enterprise Edition over Standard Edition, because Enterprise Edition has a group commit feature that you can enable, and that would be running on Windows Azure. For high availability, make sure you run your replicas on Windows Azure virtual machines. You need a domain controller, and there's actually a full MSDN tutorial set that I will write a follow-up blog on later this week to provide you a link to those documents that allows you to set up each of those steps and configuration steps that you need to actually accomplish that. Okay. So let me quickly look here on what my status, and I'm going to switch over just in a second on what my status is on my virtual machine, because as I said, I was not going to wait for that to complete, but I wanted to show you that the virtual machine that I created is now up and running. Yay. That didn't take 10 minutes, did it? So I see my virtual machine is up and running. I like SQL 14. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to open that RDP. Okay. We're going to connect. Go ahead. Did I type Cloud DBA? Can't remember. I told you I shouldn't forget my password. Oh, that's why. Thank you so much. Okay, at least someone is alert here. So what I can see is I can actually look at some options. Let me take you to the dashboard here. Okay. So what I can see here is I did spin up that virtual machine. I have my dashboard. I can see the number of cores that I'm currently running, and I can also see at the bottom what my VHD is, the size, what my host name is, and I can also see the actual public IP address, and I can see the internal IP address. Now, someone had a question earlier. Okay? So let's have a look. I have full monitoring capabilities, right? So you could see the CPU percentage, the disk reads, the disk writes. Actually, you can add your own metrics to this, okay, and say which metrics you want to enable, because that's the point where they will start measuring and monitoring. Okay, so by default, you don't have that. You could also specify what's going to be the refresh. You can then also look at endpoints, okay? And that endpoint configuration that you have is actually something that is rather important. Because what you'll see is that my default endpoints that I have are PowerShell and remote desktop. Okay, what do I need to do if I want to connect to SQL? I'll need to create an endpoint, correct. Okay, if I want to connect on that using a dedicated admin connection, I need to make sure port 1434 is open. If I want to open up that for normal SQL connectivity, I probably want to open 1433. If I want to then grab this and enable always-on availability groups, the default port configuration for always-on is what? Anyone? I would have given you a prize if you knew. It's 1522 and 1523. Okay? It's actually part of the wizard, but... But anyway, so what I can do is I can connect to my virtual machine, remote desktop in it, and manage like any other. Okay? Actually manage it like the one that I'm actually currently connected to, because I'm running this inside a virtual machine. Okay? As you can see at the top there, SQL 2014 CTP1, I'm running this all in a virtual machine. Okay? So, talked about the virtual machine options. What I can do next is I would be able to define here my own networks. Okay, so what I can do now is I can go into that entire configuration. I think from a time perspective, it will be a waste of time if I walk you through the entire configuration, because you're going to define IP ranges, you're going to define what's going to be your DNS server, and it's actually pretty well documented, so I'm not going to spend time on how to click and configure a network. It's basically a set of IP addresses. But you can then assign that virtual machine to that actual IP address. So let's have a look at SQL database. Which is the platform as a service offering. Okay? Key differentiator, it is fully managed. So you don't patch the database, you don't patch the operating system. Okay? Some of the things that you have to be aware of is when you create a database as a service, it's just a database. You probably do in a traditional SQL Server is you create database jobs, and where do your jobs reside when you create a job on SQL Server? It's going to reside in your MSDB database. Okay? You cannot create a job on a Windows Azure SQL database. However, everything is possible with SQL Server is what I always say. So what I can do is I can actually take a virtual machine, put SQL Server in there, put that virtual machine up on Windows Azure, and then create linked server definitions to that SQL database, or run database jobs and SSIS packages to connect to that SQL database that is running as a platform as a service. Okay? And actually, we have some implementations where customers say, "Lay, I want to run certain tasks on each of those databases. How do I do that?" Virtual machine in front of it, and then you can just run it from there. Okay. Very simplified management. I could connect to my portal again, and we're going to walk through that. I have dynamic scalability because I can scale out that database in terms of size. And I can manage that using the management portal, or I could use Transact SQL to do so. It is actually very fast and easy to configure, okay? It's based on SQL Server technology, but it's not fully SQL Server database technology like you have it in 2008, 2008 R2, and any version up for there or from there, okay? Question, go ahead. Does it let you choose? That's a great question. We're gonna go into that as I actually start configuring one. One thing that is important is it is such a great offering. What you can do with this is when you define a SQL database, by default, it will be a single logical database to you, to the Windows Azure data center. What we actually do is we write multiple physical, I'm losing my language there, multiple physical replicas of that database. So when you create a Windows Azure SQL database, we actually write three copies of that. And the way we do that is because we want to provide you with built-in high availability. Okay? So you'll have one primary node and two online replicas on which we are using synchronous replication to your online secondaries. Okay? That's high availability right there. Why? Because we want to make sure that you don't have any downtime when we in our data centers decide to patch our servers or operating systems. When you connect to your SQL database, we're actually redirecting you to what at that point is the primary database. So if the server where that secondary is stored, being patched, being updated, you won't see it, okay? That's how we guarantee you an uptime of 99.9% for your database. Okay, so that's a really good SLA just right there. Now, how do we choose and what are the choices that we have? Okay, we put in a diagram here, and basically you're going to look on, hey, am I going to migrate an existing or develop a new application or service? Well, if it's an existing, then look at the requirements. Is any of the requirement true? There's a common code base between on and off premises. There are feature dependencies that are not available yet on SQL database. There's storage isolation that you need to have in your database. If any of those is true, you should run SQL Server in a Windows Azure virtual machine. In the other case, if your database size is less than 150 gigs, you should run Windows Azure SQL Database. However, what you can do with Windows Azure SQL Database is the following. You can actually take that database and scale that out by re-architecting your application. So what you're going to do is, we call that, it's a concept of database sharding or federated databases. And so what you can do is within your application, you would then partition your data within the application and move that out over multiple databases. Okay, so that would still work, be able to do data retrieval as a very common architecture design, but you would be able to partition that data and spread that out across multiple databases. So let's have a look on how we're going to configure those SQL databases. So going back to our portal, okay? And as I'm here on the portal, what I can do is I can go to SQL databases, okay? Now, when I set up a SQL database, what I can do is I create a new database, okay? I can use a SQL database option here and use the quick create or the custom create. Let's go to the custom create there. I could specify the database name. I like SQL tagged Europe. Okay. And I can specify the size of that database. Now, the size of this database is actually interesting. The size you specify here is the size of the data file. We don't care about the size of the log file. You have no control over that. One of the other things you have no control is the use of MasterDB and the use of TempDB. If you are too resource intensive, we will use a concept of what we call bandwidth throttling, and we will throttle you down. Okay? You don't have that control. Now, we're thinking along the lines on how to provide things like resource reservation. There's going to be a couple of sessions that are going to actually drill down into that. That will allow you to guarantee a certain amount of IOPS or transactions to that perspective. Okay? But I have my database here. I could specify my size. There's a web edition that I'm going to pay less for than a business edition. I could specify my data size between 1 gig or 5 gigs. Okay, or I could go to the business edition and say that I could go up to 150 gigs. You specify the subscription, which is basically the billing. Now, you see that I have multiple here. Okay, it is perfectly possible to give someone access to multiple subscriptions on Windows Azure for manageability purposes. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm not paying anyways because none of these are actually my subscriptions. It's servers that I get access to. So what I'm going to do is I'm now going to choose a server. Okay? So the question was earlier, can I choose my own server? Yeah. Does it choose a storage account? The answer to that is yes, it does. But what you actually define is what's going to be the server that you run this database on. And so from that concept, you actually have the opportunity to combine multiple databases onto the same server. Okay? But the server is a server name that you are not going to decide. So what you can do is you could say, I want to run this on a new server and define a location to it. The thing is, of course, it's going to use a storage account. But let's have a look on how what happens when we actually create that new database server. So it's going to ask me for a login. It's going to ask me for a region. Okay, so my login name, SQL admin. If I try to be smart and type a password that I will remember, like pass at word one, for example, it should actually tell me that I'm not allowed to use that password. Okay. I might be fine on that one, actually. And then I could define the region that I want to run this in. Okay. I want to allow Windows Azure services to access that server. That's going to into the default secure secure by default. So what I'm going to have there is I'm going to set, yes, Azure can connect to this, but if I want to connect to this from my applications, I still have to define firewall settings on Windows Azure to actually connect to this. Okay? As you can see, as I have my status here, okay, it says, I like SQL TEU is being created, and it's done. So the SQL database is created just right there. Okay? So I have that SQL database that is up and running, and I can actually see all my databases, which edition. Okay? What else I can do is I could look at the dashboard of that database, and I can see the server and the connection string. I can also see the management URL that comes with it. Okay? So what I can see here is I see this server name, and if I grab this server name and I would go to SQL Management Studio, what I can do is I can connect, specify that I want to connect to the server name that I put in here, clicking. This is my server name. I didn't take the full name, sorry about that. Copy this and paste it there. So I get my server name, I'm going to specify authentication, specify my username, SQL admin, specify my password. Okay, and I'm going to hit connect. This might fail. Why will it fail? Because of the error message I get right here. Okay? You cannot open the server requested by the login because the client IP address is not allowed to access the server. Okay? That makes sense. You have to enable that. So what I can do is I can go back to my Windows Azure portal and say which client address can access the server. Now, that configuration itself could take something up to 5 minutes for that firewall rule actually to process. So what I have here, I have these servers, okay, that run that SQL database. So I have the one that I started here. I could go into the settings on that server, look at the databases I have running on that, look into the configuration. And in that configuration, you will see what are the allowed IP addresses, okay? And it says Windows Azure services allowed, but there's no rule that actually identifies that the client IP address that you currently have is allowed to connect to that server, okay? No problem. We can add that IP address. So now I just added my client IP address. I can save that. Okay, and as I said, this could take up to 5 minutes for that firewall to actually refresh. But once that I save this, and I go in here, I hit connect. I am now connected. I can see my database here. Okay, and then the great thing about this is you're back in SQL Server, right? This is where my DBAs come in and say, I have SQL Management Studio. I now have my Windows Azure SQL database here, and I could do what I used to do. I could start creating tables, write stored procedures, and so on. Okay? even move over existing databases and such. Okay. One of the things you see there's that federation tab that allows you to scale out multiple databases and combine them together. And the storage size on that is basically a limit. You could say, I have 200 federated databases, each 250 gigs, for example. Okay. What else I can do now is, let's have a look. There's a couple of things that I can't do, right? So what I can do is, I can look at my system databases, but I see my master database, and that's about all that I have. What I don't have is if I look into management, I can run some reports, I can look into security, can I right-click there, and I can create a new login. Okay. SQL database does not support integrated security. Okay? If you want integrated security, you have to run SQL Server in a Windows Azure virtual machine. So good question there. Now, what about moving existing databases to the cloud? There's a couple of options here. What I can do is I have this local database that I have running here. I'm running this inside a virtual machine. And so what I can do is I can go to tasks of that database and look at the options that I have here. And so these are some of the new options that we talked about in the keynote this morning, is the making the deployment to Windows Azure much easier. You'll see an option there that says deploy database to a Windows Azure virtual machine. That is actually a pretty cool feature. I have a database on premises and I want to take that database, move that over to a Windows Azure virtual machine. I'm not going to showcase that because I'm actually going to keep that for the SQL 14 session I have tomorrow. But what I can do with that is I can, it will spin up, allow me to select an image from the gallery. As soon as I have that image in the gallery, it will spin up the virtual machine, do the right network settings, and then move that database over. Now, in SQL Server in the past, we introduced a concept that was called a data tier application, and I could register that database as a data tier application, which means I could grab the schema, and I could also grab the data, package that up, move that over to Windows Azure, okay, and import that into a SQL database as well. So that's one of your options. So I can also use the other option, which says deploy database to SQL Azure, and that's a new SQL 2014 feature as well that's really going to focus on that, making that deployment much, much easier for you. Okay? Now, there's also a lot of what-if scenarios, right? What if that database actually fails to deploy? So what I have here is I have a database that is called Contoso SalesDB. I'm going to right-click on that, and I'm going to take that and say, I want to deploy that database to SQL Azure. Okay, I get a wizard, and we'll hit Next. It's asking me to connect to a target server. So what I'm going to specify here is I'm going to specify the target server that I want to put that database on, which is going to be the Windows Azure SQL database that I want to connect to. Rather than having to go through that Azure portal the way I had to do this in the past, I can now actually go through the wizard and say, hey, I want a new database that is called Contoso SalesDB. This is the size that I want to specify. Okay. I'm going to take a business one and make that into a 30 gig database. I'll hit Next, and I'll hit Finish. Okay? Now, don't expect this to just work. If this works, it's the same as, I mean, you're taking a risk. You just don't know whether it's going to work. Why would that be? Anyone? I don't need to switch the database to contain mode. That's a really good answer because it could be, right? What really happens there, the dependency that you have there might have to do with logins, But a dependency might also have to do with requirements that we put in if you put a database onto SQL database. We actually teach database administrators and database developers to do things the right way, which means a table needs to have a clustered index. If you move a database over that doesn't have a clustered index, you cannot use that wizard at first to deploy that to Windows Azure SQL Database. Okay? If you have functionality on data types CLR-based types that you defined in custom types, we don't support those either. It is a standard platform as a service database offering. Okay? So if I hit finish, I actually know for sure this is going to fail because it's part of my demo. Okay? It's going to extract the database schema, look at that database schema, and it's going to identify whether there are certain things that I need to be aware of. This is exactly the same as what you do in SQL Server 2012 when you decide to extract a data tier application. And as I said, this is failing, and it's going to tell me why it fails. Okay? The export fails, and the extraction of the schema fails as well. So what I do get there is I can actually drill down into that error message. Okay? And it says that I have an ORFID login and a user. So the gentleman up front here that says, hey, contain database, you were very close there, right? So I have an object with a database user, and if I look at the extraction of the schema, okay, the element Contoso user has been orphaned from his login and cannot be deployed. What you could do is if you want to deploy an existing database, is you can actually use SQL Server Data Tools. Now, SQL Server Data Tools, I have to admit that the terminology and the naming that we used might not have been the best choice. Because what we did with SQL Server 2012 is we actually named Business Intelligence Development Studio to SQL Server Data Tools. So that's going to give you the business intelligence components like you were typically running into Bits. Okay? What else we did is we released a feature that is called SQL Server Data Tools that allows you to create database projects. And that is a great opportunity for database developers and admins to get closer to each other and get cozier with each other, is what I typically would say. Because what I can do is I can do something like this. I can go to File, New, Project, and I can create what we call a SQL Server database project. Now, if you're a DBA, think about the opportunity you have there, because this is going to make your life so much easier. Okay? I can click on a SQL Server database project. The project will be created. And I can do basically anything that I do within SQL Server Management Studio. I can create tables, I can create stored procedures, I can create views, I can create logins. So you have some capabilities there. Okay? So I can go to my SQL Server Solution Explorer. I have a project there. And so what I can do within that project, I can start adding items to it. Okay? If I look on the items you can add, is you can add table valued functions, views, anything basically, okay? So if I add right here in my database project, what I can now do is grab that database project, add that new item to it, okay, and specify everything that I have there. The nice thing about this, and that's why I said we're going to get closer to our developers there, is I can integrate that with TFS, so I can fully integrate that and do source control over it. I can actually use this to do something that I like the most, is take an existing database, monitor it on how that database in the world even got created and what my schemas look like and so on, and refactored an existing database. So that database that initially failed, what I can do is I can actually go to SQL Object Explorer here, connect to my local database, and that Contoso SalesDB that I have here is I can right-click and say, I want to create a new project out of this database. Okay? So what this will do is I'm going to call this Contoso SalesDB Demo, okay? I can create a new solution and put a directory on that, and I hit start. What this will do, it actually is going to take my database, refactor it, so it's going to import the schema, table definition, it has information about the data and everything, and it's going to grab all of that information and roll that up. Okay? So I imported my database, I can now hit finish to continue. So once that I have this, what I get here is something that's going to make my life as a DBA so much easier. I have a full definition on the right-hand side that's going to tell me what are your tables. It's going to create .SQL files out of each of those. Okay. It's also going to go into the security tab, and it says I have that Contoso user here. I don't need that on SQL Azure, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to delete that user and also delete that role membership. Okay? Same thing on the stored procedures. I can see the stored procedures that were defined. Now, one of the nice things that you can do is you can actually build this project to the target platform that you're going to be deploying to. So what I can do is I can go into the properties of this project and say right there, what my target platform is going to be. The great thing about that target platform is that you can go back. Now, we all know that we added functionality over SQL Server based on customer demands, which includes new data types and so on. What if I have a SQL 2012 database and I'm using a data type that is not supported? And I want to take that existing database and deploy that to SQL Server 2008. I can, and it will actually tell me which data types are not compatible and so on. Okay? What else I can do with this, I can also do things like schema comparisons and look at what sits within my project and then grab that project and do a schema compare between what I have in the project versus what I have inside the database. You could create a snapshot using data tiered applications. And actually, Aaron, that's sitting up front here, has a session that we moved from Friday to Thursday at noon. That's going to talk about that. Now, what I can do is I want to deploy this to Windows Azure SQL Database. So as I grab this database, okay, I can look into some of the other options. Okay, and this is really great here. What I can do with this is I can what we call enable code analysis on build. As I said, we're going to make everyone that creates a database smarter and have them doing things the right way. Okay? So I can actually say, well, if I enable code analysis, what I want to do is I want to avoid people writing select star and do stored procedures and view definitions. And it will give me a warning and say, hey, you were writing a select star. Question. Is there any relation to the SQL version and SQL Azure? Like a one-on-one mapping, the answer to that will be no. Okay, there's no one-on-one mapping, which means there's features that might go into SQL Azure database prior to coming to the box products and vice versa. Yeah. And I'm going to show that. I'm going to hold off on your question for just 1 second, if that's okay. Okay. Because what I want to show you is I actually refactored my database that I have running on SQL 2012. And what I want to do with that database is I want to take that database and built that for Windows Azure SQL Database. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to save this first. I can then build a solution. Okay, and my build failed. Oh, wow, panic, right? My build failed. Okay? If I look on the error list, okay, I get error messages here that are rather important to me. It says the DIM customer table does not have a cluster index, DIM product subcategory does, oh, wow. That's not good. Not a good database design. Someone created those databases without putting an index on it. So what I can do is this. I'm going to go to that database, okay? Set my primary key. I'm going to save that one. I'm going to go to this one, set my primary key, okay? Go to that one, set my primary key. I could have scripted this. I should have scripted this. Okay. But what I can do is I can just, as you can see, the syntax at the bottom will change. Okay. So we'll first add the primary key to this one because otherwise it will simply not deploy. So I have this product order table that has a primary key. Everything has a primary key. So let's have a look at our build. Okay. And there we go, just to be sure there, my build succeeded. Okay, so now I took this database that I had sitting on-premises and I can deploy that to Windows Azure SQL Database. I do want to get back to the question that the gentleman up there had. So. Yeah, so the question is, I have a customer that has lots of databases and I want to check whether those databases are ready to be deployed to Windows Azure, okay? What you have to do, and again, you could do this with PowerShell as well, you can just do what I did is take each of those databases, okay, like this one. I'm going to take the Contoso Sales Cloud database here. What I can do is I can right-click, refactor this one, okay, by creating a new project out of it, which is actually what I showed you. If I don't get any build errors, I can deploy that to the platform that I'm targeting. Okay? Now, the good thing is, I can go back. I made some changes to this database, right? This is a project. I did not touch my production database. If I want to implement that into production, I will have to deploy that to production. Okay, so you're working with this in an offline fashion. You could go into your customer, get all those databases, store them into projects, do your work offline, and say to the customer, hey, you know what? This is what the change has to be, and we can do a schema compare against your production database. So I'm not going to go too much into the details on those because we have a separate session on that. So what I can do next is I can now say this database that I have here, I built it successfully. So once that I built it successfully, I can publish that database, edit my target database connection, specify that I want to connect to that server that I specified already, SQL admin, pass at word one, it's a default, this is gonna be the database. I can test the connection. Okay, it says it's not visible, that's about right, okay. And I can publish this database, and it's going to publish my database directly to Windows Azure SQL Database. Okay? I just took a database that was sitting on a local server, modified it, and published that to the cloud. That's how simple this is. Did you see that? So what happens is now, if I go here to the server that I published, okay, of course I can hit refresh, and you will see that within my database, that Contoso SalesDemoDB that I just deployed, is going to be up there. It's going to be in there. What I can do next, I can go to my application, redirect it to the Windows Azure SQL Database service, and I'm up and running. Okay. One more thing I have to show you on the presentation is there's a lot of things that we can talk about, and there's a lot of things we're going to drill down to the rest of the week. What I actually put in the slide deck is a track resource slide that connects to the Windows Azure portal. You've seen Data Explorer Geoflow this morning. I think it's really exciting to play around with that, with things that you would typically not play with. A lot of our learnings we have available in the Microsoft Virtual Academy, but there's also a link to our hands-on labs. I encourage you to go to our hands-on lab portal and play around with this yourself. You can do that 24 hours a day, 7x7, and really take advantage of those experiences as well. Okay, we have things up like always-on availability groups, using SQL Server data tools, so that's actually all out there. And it's actually a website that I run, and I write the majority of our hands-on labs anyways. From a timing perspective, we are actually perfectly at time. So with this, I would like to ask you to later on go back to the Channel 9 where you could download a copy of this presentation. You can look into the recorded session as well if you want to do that, and you can evaluate the session. Okay? Thanks for your time. As I said, I'm going to be getting you drinks. The reception is open. Thanks for being here. Have a wonderful week.